And jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed on this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Well, I got to tell you, folks, how would you like to wake up to that every morning, huh? Is that something? You probably think it must be raining because we're inside, but no, we're starting a little bit later today down here at Operation Save America. Michelle was sitting over there. I said, hey, I need a cup of coffee. And so there's my pretty little wife. I want everybody to see her. 37 years. Thanks, sweetheart. Hey, man, we are inside here today. Not because it's raining or anything like that, but Chet Gallagher, who's sitting right beside me, and then Johnny Burkeen, I'm going to pull Johnny in here as well. Just kind of give you guys a little bit of an update of what's going on. Chet's got a meeting coming up, so I'm going to let him. Chet Gallagher is the Assistant Director of Operation Save America, Associate Director, whatever you want to call him. I think we've told his story before. He was the Las Vegas cop who really laid down his career to go rescue babies. Been at it a long, long time. Just recently moved to Tennessee. And he's the guy that does all the the coordinator of this whole thing. You know, it was a lot, 300, 400 people, however many are here. And he keeps them all moving and going in different directions. So, Chet, just because I know you got to run, we'll bring you here at the top of the show. What's going on, man? What's happening?
You know, it's an exciting day today. We've got so much going on. We have a major presence outside of this killing center, the last remaining surgical abortion clinic in Kentucky that we're hoping to see.
We're bombarding that thing, aren't we, Chet? We took that place over.
Talking about spiritual warfare and spiritual bombardment. You know, there's all kind of heavy artillery in the spirit, and it's been amazing. And when I'm talking about heavy artillery, I'm talking about general Christian men and women, families, children out there worshiping God, passing out tracts, ministering to the opposition, the people we call the pro-aborts, these death squads in their little blue vests that are trying to shield and cover these women and men as they're going into this killing center. And it's just people from all over the country are here today to try to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, this gospel of life, in an effective way that's going to result not only in the salvation of families, but in the very salvation of souls. You know, we're all created in God's image, and these little children that are destroyed need to be born the first time so they can be born again to serve the King who's created them. Yeah. And that's really the heart of our ministry.
You know, Chet, I wanted to jump in because my brain runs about 1,000 different directions.
I never know that to be true.
I was thinking last night, I've told the story about when you're going to rescue somebody, you got to be where they are, right? You got to be exactly where they are. And we had a save yesterday at the clinic, but that's not why we do it. Chet, we're a prophetic witness. Explain that for the people to understand, sure. That we're more than just out there saving babies. It's a prophetic witness to the world.
Yeah, and it is true. We serve a risen King. He is the Master. He's laid down our life for us, commands us to do the same. He rescued us from our sin and from eternal death and calls us to do the same as we have opportunity. The Scripture commands us. He commands us. It's His word, even the Proverbs. Yes, it's still His words. And He's commanding us to rescue those who are being led away to slaughter. Oh, hold them back, the Scripture says. Also says, if in that day that you didn't do anything, will I not hold you accountable for what you didn't do or what you've done? And so we have a lot of people out here today that are doing something to preach this kind of a gospel. But it's all about Him. If it wasn't about Jesus, I'll tell you, folks, I'm out of here. You know, I'm glad that we have a chance to intervene, save lives. You know, a professional lifesaver for years. I'm so privileged to have been a police officer and served him as a Christian during that time. But I'll tell you, if he was not in this, if it wasn't about him, I wouldn't be here. We even have to put up with people
like Dale Socia sticking
his head. Pastor Socia, I got to put you in a headlock. Oh, no, we can't do this anymore.
I know our buddy Chad Estes is probably listening out there. Chad said this is a church camp for adults, Chet. It's a lot of truth to that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
To get around in fellowship. You know. Chet, before I let you go here, everybody senses, I sense, a lot of people I talk to, the worms kind of turn. Something is different this time, Chet. Always before, folks, unless you've been out on the streets and done some of the stuff we've done, you you can't understand how we are automatically the enemy. It doesn't matter. The police are against us. The media is against us. People driving down the street are against us. But Chet, something has happened this week here in Louisville. You know, we had the I'm sure the FBI's around. We got the federal marshals that are here. We got the, I mean, there are cops everywhere. But brother, they're not harassing us like they have in the past. What's going on, Chet?
You know, I was yesterday, I'll kind of sum it up this way. The on-scene commander, the police lieutenant, who actually is retiring next week, this is his last assignment as a police officer.
Wow.
And he and I really connected. As a matter of fact, he asked me to send him the link of my testimony. He watched that, came back with a response that was just unbelievable. Mm. It's some wonderful things. And God's really working on his heart. He came over to me, and as he was walking to get a sandwich across the street at the Subway, he said, you know, Chet, I want you to know that it's going to be my pleasure to be sure that any police department that ever calls us is going to hear from us just exactly what an amazing time this has been in being out here with your people. You've done everything you said you're going to do in the way that you said that you're going to do it. And not only do we respect that, we've seen things out here with families that we've never seen before. So have that kind of statement
from the
commander. But at the same time, we want you to know that over and over again, we hold them accountable to their responsibility before God to be true lifesavers, to really, well, adhere and to perform their oath of office they took to a holy God to rescue those who are being led away to slaughter. So I've told the police in the three meetings I had with them leading up to this time that they're going to hear our people reaching out to them to be the godly lesser magistrates, that godly delegated authority that they have to perform that duty that will result in the rescue of these children. So
Chet, also, if I understand this right, you correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I can take correction. Okay, so we're cool
Michelle,
there.
Michelle,
they were going to testify on our behalf at the temporary restraining order, right?
They did. The major, actually, before the city council, who was trying to get their own buffer zone before the Fed stepped in, the major said, there's no need for this. We have met with the leadership of Operation Save America, and over again, they've assured us what they're going to be doing. We are in communication with them constantly, and we happen to believe everything they told us.
Mm.
He didn't say that once, but he responded with that answer three times to three different questions throughout the hearing. So that's the kind of thing that God has done.
Here's one of the things I think is going on, folks, as crazy as this sounds. I believe the police are stepping back. I think all across America, people are stepping back, and they're saying, wait a minute here. If this nation is going to fall in the hands of a group of people, would we rather have it be these Christians, the nation fall into their hands, or would we have the nation fall into the hands of those crybabies that we see everywhere else? And I think their eyes are opening it up and saying, these folks really aren't the enemy.
Well, that's right. And you know, what happens is when you really bring light into a very dark place, it exposes the darkness. And there's a significant distinction, a visible, clear distinction between good and evil, light and darkness. And police officers, normal citizens as well, walking down the street, see the difference. So I'd have to say amen to what you just said.
So we live it out. We live our faith out. We're not ashamed of the gospel. We don't back down. We don't compromise. But at the same time, we try to be as obedient as we can be. And they see that, and they respect that, and they understand it. So,
and by the way, anybody that's out there, you know, we're going to be here until Saturday morning. So there's still time to come out
and join us.
Come and join us. Spend a few hours with us on the street, stay for the rally, whatever you can do, just come out and join us. And it's been a joy to be with you this morning. Thanks for letting me spend the first part of my morning. I'm going to head into that meeting.
Go get things organized. Give me a headphone back.
Thanks,
Chet. Look who else just walked in there. Mark Harrington. Mark, I'm going to get you over here in a minute. Go eat your food there. Mark has brought his Jumbotron. Johnny Burkeen. Folks, listen, I just want to give you some personality. So, slide over here, Johnny. This is good old faithful brother Johnny Burkeen. I'd like to set his beard on fire. Look at that thing, man. And guys, I want you to hear this. Johnny Burkeen is from Mississippi. Well, I think, I don't know if he's originally from Mississippi. He lives, you know, that's where I got to know him. And Johnny has given his life to, believe it or not, driving one of those truth trucks. Now, you guys have seen those truth trucks. Johnny's got his own, and that's what he does. He gets in that truck all day long. We showed some pictures of it the other day, Johnny. And he drives around with that truck being a prophetic witness to abortion and many other things. But Johnny, I want you to take a minute or two. Let's see if I can get this earplug back in your ear in case somebody's got a question for you. Where'd that thing fall on me, John? There you go. Johnny, just give a little bit of your testimony, because I think there are guys out there that, you know, they see guys like us out on the street and fighting these fights, but they don't know where we come from. So talk, give, just share what's on your heart there, John.
Well, I just not a real smart person, so, and I'm a good truck driver. I drove commercial trucks, 18-wheelers for 15 years, so, and so I'm pretty good at it, and the truck fell into my lap, and three times, and so I just believe that, you know, I need to do something, so I'm not as smart as the coach or Chet Gallagher, so.
John, Johnny tries his truck. Come on, Johnny, let's get into it. You went from serving the devil to give us a little bit of your testimony. What happened to you, Johnny?
Okay. Well, I was one of these Christians that believed that repentance was something you did every Sunday morning. You put your money in the plate and ask to be forgiven, and Friday and Saturday you go do the same thing you did the week before. And finally, I guess in 2005, I realized what repentance was, is to stop doing it, you know, quit. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over. Jesus isn't a license of sin, so I figured out that our God revealed to me that I needed to stop doing this. I was in trouble with a big God, so I just decided, God revealed himself to me, and I told God, I said, I don't know how much longer I have left to live, but I want to spend the rest of that time serving you.
You were in the slammer, weren't you, Johnny? Didn't you end up in the slammer?
I went in the penitentiary for 3 years for dope. Smoking marijuana. And so I got to sober up for the first time in 33 years and read the Bible, and God actually came to life. And, you know, it wasn't just me saying that I'm a Christian, but God actually working in my life. And when I got out, that's when I realized I needed to do better and serve him and to give myself to him and not say, well, God, what can you do for me? You know. So that's what I do now. In 2010, I quit my job driving a truck, and I got the Truth Truck, and that's what I do now.
Called the Truth Truck. Tell some of the stuff you got sticking on your truck there, Johnny, because I'm sure you get a lot of those friendly fingers up in the air towards you, don't you?
Yeah, well, there's a warning sign on the back that I really like. It talks about proud men, drunkards, you know, all these sins that people are, you know, besetting sins that people think that they can, you know, just ask God to forgive them every, like myself, you know, there was the sins that I did. And I think that, you know, I used to think that God would forgive me every Sunday and I could just keep doing them, but on one side there's a dead baby that says abortion is wrong, and on the other side is a live baby that says, you know, the gift of God is life, you know. And on the back there's a warning sign that talks about all the sins, and people actually get so violent and hostile about that they'll pull around me and try and wreck me off the road and stuff. So I have a dash cam in there to protect myself, but thank God I haven't gotten any wrecks yet. It was a real close call on the way up here. A guy slammed on brakes in front of me, and I had to slam on brakes, and it caused my brakes to go out.
So
I had to order parts and get somebody to help me, and we blocked one of the wheels off. I'm driving with three brakes right now, and we got the parts yesterday. We're gonna try and fix the truck to where it has all four wheels have brakes on it.
So. And folks, Johnny, you talk about operating on a nickel budget. He operates on a penny budget. And, you know, you have repairs and all that stuff that comes up. And I'm just saying this publicly that we try to help Johnny financially. And so some of the money, every time you guys donate to us at Pass the Salt, I want you to know that we spread it around. And there's a lot of folks, listen, there's a lot of great ministry going on. Just think of something as simple as this, to get a truck and put some things on the side of it and drive that truck around. And so Johnny's given his life to do and is having a great impact. There I am. Johnny, what do you love about OSA, man? A couple more minutes. What do you love about OSA?
I love the fellowship, the brothers that are strong, that are bold with their witness, that aren't afraid to go out and proclaim the love of Jesus to other people. And just encouraging, you know, and uplifting. You know, when I'm away from here, you know, and I'm just on my own, it just seems kind of pulls you down, the hatred of the world,
you're all
the
alone.
Lawlessness.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, you know, target me because of the truth of the truck, the light of Jesus, the love of Jesus.
Yeah.
And they hate that. They created a God in their own image, and they don't have to deal with these sins. But, you know, when I drive that truck down and they come around me, they have to deal with it. You know, the conscience awakens.
Yes, sir. Not everybody has a functioning conscience, but a few sure do out there. We try to get them awake. All right, Johnny, man, thanks for coming. Thanks for all you do, man.
Problem.
Love you, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, there's a good warrior for you, Brad, folks. The guys just like Johnny Burkeen. Hey, Mark, come on over here if you would.
Sure.
Old buddy Mark Harrington, those of you in the Columbus area. Columbus, so here, put this in your headphone there, Mark, so you can listen.
Mark's, good to see
Mark's down here today with his Jumbotron, and they're going to set it up. We're going to set it up outside the courtroom. He's got his family here. And how many young kids you bring with you, Mark?
21.
See, Mark's always ahead of the curve because he started recruiting young kids called the Justice Rides about 3 or 4 years ago, trying to train young kids, get them in the battle, and, man, it's really bearing a whole lot of fruit. But, Mark, last night you announced a big victory that you guys had.
Yeah.
Share with everybody what that
well, you know, is. Coach.
By the way, Mark is with Created Equal.
Created Equal.
CreatedEqual.com.org.
.org.
.org.
.org. Right. Well, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, Coach.
Yep.
There have been people that have been plowing the ground on the Stericycle issue forever, including OSA and Rusty, who years ago protested Stericycle in Haw River, North Carolina.
I was there.
Were you really?
Yeah, I was
okay.
there.
Okay, well, there you go. And same with Michael Markavich.
Wow, there's a name.
Yeah, there you go. He started the whole Stericycle thing years ago. But what happened was...
Stericycle, folks, they pick up the medical waste. Now, we would think about old syringes and that kind of stuff, but they're picking up babies, the dead babies.
Fetal remains, right.
So Planned Parenthood kills the babies. They have to dispose of them somehow. They don't know how to do it. So Stericycle comes and picks up the babies for them.
They pay them to do that.
Slow learners listen to
a certain... No, I understand. Okay. I mean, I guess I'm assuming too much.
Yeah.
But one of David Dalyden's videos came out in, I think it was late 2015, that was actually under wraps. They had it under court order, couldn't be released, it got leaked. And in that, Renee Chilean, who's an abortionist in Michigan, said that on tape, said that they were one incinerator company away from being shut down.
Meaning, Mark, that if somebody were to shut down Stericycle, abortion industry couldn't get rid of their babies, right?
I mean, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
If you can't dispose of the babies, you can't kill the babies. You got to find places to put them, right? Just like when the Nazis, when they'd exterminate Jews, they had to put them in a pit or they had to create crematorium or what have you.
Had to get rid of the bodies.
Same issue, right? They had to figure out a way to do that. And that's, you know, Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry has found medical waste companies to do that. And Stericycle is the biggest one. So what we decided to say, we took her at her word and said, hey, you know, she's giving us a playbook here.
Right.
You know, she says it's going to shut them down. Well, let's do it. So I wrote a letter to the CEO warning them, saying, listen, if you guys continue to partner with Planned Parenthood, we are going to expose you and your board of directors to your community. And so I sent that letter out. We went up there in April of 2016.
Up in Michigan.
No, Lake Forest, Illinois.
I'm Lake Forest,
which,
Illinois.
By the way.
Rich,
lush,
rich,
very rich, and this guy's loaded. But we went into that neighborhood and flyered using these postcards that have a picture of the CEO next to an abortion photo, and it just says Charles Aludo. That's his name. Charles Aludo enables child killing, and we handed it out to probably 2,000, 3,000 homes.
Folks, do you understand what? So this guy's making all kinds of money taking care of dead babies. And nobody knows it. They just know he's a manager of a big company. And so Mark and his crew get up there and they hand out little flyers, say, here's what this guy really does.
Exactly.
Yeah, he makes a lot of money, but he's making money off of dead babies.
Dead babies, which nobody knows, of course.
And so he didn't like that very well, did he?
Didn't like it. The next morning I get a voicemail from their attorney saying they're going to sue us for false light, which is basically lying, defamation, libel, if you will. And then the third thing was the intentional infliction of emotional distress.
And you said last night, guilty of that one.
Guilty for that one, because that's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
The whole idea is to shame them.
Right.
Shame works.
Shame works, brother.
I mean,
whatever happened to shame?
It changes people. I mean, And we don't. So anyway, that started the lawsuit. Our good friends at the Thomas More Society out of Chicago represented us. They represent David DeLeiden, by the way. They came and represented us. We beat them in court finally. And then I wrote them a final letter saying, listen, okay, now that we're past this, where do you guys stand? And they sent us information saying that they had ceased disposing of aborted babies from Planned Parenthood and 400 abortion mills in that 2-year period or what have you. So
let's camp right there, yeah, okay. Mark. You're talking about Mark Harrington and 20 kids.
20
yeah. kids going door to door, handing out flyers,
exactly.
telling the truth about what this guy did, and this Goliath falls.
Exactly. I mean, that's why we, you know, you got to be wise as serpents. Find the pressure point.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they weak? We don't want to hit them where they're strong all the time, although there's nothing wrong with that because we've got to put up that, you know, front. We've got to be able to stop them from moving. But also, you got to find out where are they weak? And she gave us that, you know, because it was undercover. She was with her buddies talking about where Stericycle, and if they didn't have incinerator companies, they couldn't dispose of the babies, and that was their vulnerable point. So it still is. And now that we've got the Goliath of Stericycle backing off, now Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry has to find other means to dispose of their babies. And that leads us to go after all those little regional,
little small companies,
mom and pop medical waste companies. There's one right here in Louisville that we're going to expose on Thursday. So we're going nationwide. We're going to try to shut down as many as we can and put the hurt on the abortion industry.
Mark, I really believe that they are teetering more than we even understand. If we could be in their boardrooms and the meetings
right.
that they're having, we would hear
they
are freaking out because they know that they are in some serious trouble. So
right.
we're at an opportunity now. You know, I got in trouble with a lot of people because I supported Donald Trump. And I said, listen, last thing we need is a pastor for president. The last thing we need. We need somebody that's going to flip over some tables.
Yeah.
And he has moved the ball forward. Here's what I think has happened, Mark. He's made it okay to be bold again. More than anything.
That's right.
And I say over and over, Donald Trump's not going to save America, but sure has shown the John the Baptist how this battle
exactly.
has to be fought.
Well, all the men that are sitting in the weeds, right, laying low, see him, and they come out now. I mean, it's just, he's given men a reason to be men.
That's
the way I look at it.
That's right, and giving them the right to be men again. Exactly. Stand up and speak up, and
exactly.
that's what we have to do.
Yep.
So, Mark, you've come down here today. You brought your crew with you, and you brought this Jumbotron.
Right.
Explain the Jumbotron, what the big deal is about that and how effective it is.
Well, we know abortion victim photos work, right?
We
use
do.
Them all the time in front of abortion mills. We use them in the public square. We use them in college and high school campuses. You use them, every, you know, they work. We know that. The bigger the better, I say. And moving images or video is going to be more effective than still images. We know that as well, right?
Right.
I mean, there's nothing like a video to communicate what you need other than, you know, a static photo. So we started doing this a couple of years ago because the technology is now to the point that we can afford to do it. It's easier for folks to access that kind of technology. And now we just use this Jumbotron selectively. We don't just do it, you can't do it every day, obviously.
Big screen TV, you know
exactly.
what a Jumbotron
Huge,
is.
Right, you go to a sporting event, what do you see? A big Jumbotron, right? That's what this is, it's a mobile unit that we roll up and this screen telescopes out of the middle of the trailer, and then it's a 12 by 16 or 18
wow.
foot screen, and it'll play an abortion video all day today in downtown Louisville.
Sound,
that's
be loud
sound,
and everything.
Everything else, yeah.
So people will come by and they'll be aghast at what they see.
They will. I mean, that's the whole point, right? You got to see abortion to reject it. You can't explain it rhetorically, right? You got to have some kind of visual aid to make the baby real, make abortion real. That's what the video does.
You know, Mark, I've known you. In fact, you're one of the guys who really helped me get rolling in ministry. The first newsletter I did in ministry, Mark Harrington showed me how to do. So we go back a ways. And I hear and you hear, we all hear, that we're not loving enough, right, Mark? We're not loving. You guys need to be, you need to show more love. That's not the way that you're going to win people to Jesus, by showing those pictures. That's not the way to do it. But, Mark, this is a gospel-centered ministry. This isn't
mm-hmm.
just an abortion ministry, right?
No, of course not.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, listen, there's a difference. What is the urgent thing? What's the important thing? Babies are being butchered. The shedding of innocent blood on a nation brings its doom, its demise. We need to shut down the abortion industry because that, to me, is the urgent thing. Babies are dying. if children were being butchered in your downtown today, someone was lining them up and shooting them in the head, I guarantee you'd be down there trying to stop.
You may hope.
I would hope, right. But the important thing is the gospel, right?
Right.
I mean, those two things are not mutually exclusive. When we go out and witness against abortion, we get more conversations about the gospel.
That's right, the gospel.
Because it opens up the questions of morality, what's
life,
right, what's
where's
wrong,
life come from?
Is that murder? Is that not? I mean, it's the whole gamut right there. So that's not what we lead with. We don't lead with that necessarily. But when it gets to that, we come around to that. We're open to talking about it. And we see more people talking about religion, just Christianity.
Folks, listen, it's immediacy. That's what Mark was saying. The point he's making is immediacy. Yes, we would like to see these people be saved. But in the process of being saved, we want to rescue those who are being led to slaughter. It's
exactly.
a two-pronged process.
I mean, listen, if you were in Nazi Germany and there are Jews being hauled off to the death camps, you wouldn't be just witnessing to the SS officers. I mean, you would, right? But you'd be trying to stop them.
You got to go to where they are to rescue them.
Got to stop them. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to stop the killing.
So just a couple minutes here, Mark. Talk about a little bit about your Justice Ride, what you're doing with these young people and how successful that's been.
Justice Ride is simply patterned after the Freedom Rides. It gives an opportunity for young people to get together for a week in a bus, chartered bus, like the Freedom Riders who went on the road to defy the rulings regarding segregated buses. This is what this was patterned after. So we give kids an opportunity to be together for a week. We go on the road. We go city to city to city or campus to campus to campus. We train them in the bus. We take them out on the street. We train them in the bus. We take them out on the street. We train them in the bus. Take them on the street. I'm a firm believer that kids, people learn
on
the ground. They learn boots on the ground. They learn by doing, not necessarily just by listening.
Just drawing the plays up on the chalkboard isn't good enough.
They got to execute a plan, and they got to get it in. They got to get the basics. But then they go out and they learn best on the street. So that's what we do twice a year. We go to Florida during the winter. We're in Ohio, so we go to Florida, do a bunch of campuses. And in the summer, we do it in the Midwest. And so it's been great. I mean, the kids love it. They're looking for something, folks. I mean, look here.
It's unbelievable.
Right?
There's a lot of
them. They are looking for a cause they can believe in. They don't want to get involved in these politically correct things.
No.
You know, they look at those and say, those, you know.
Mark, I've been making this point now for quite a while, that we have not yet come to the realization that Christianity is now counterculture.
Exactly.
We are not, no matter how many churches you see, folks, no matter how big they are, they are locked in with the culture. And true Christianity on the streets, activism is counterculture. And as soon as we embrace the fact that we are, in fact, different from everybody else, we're peculiar people.
That's right.
And begin to get to train up young people to understand the call upon their life that, yes, they are little arrows in the hands of the Lord that have been shot into specific places to become that counterculture. Once we sell them on that idea, now they're not trying to blend in. Now they understand there's going to be some conflict.
Exactly.
There's going to be argument.
Yes, right.
And they learn to make their argument from the position of their faith, and man, it revolutionizes everything. So folks, instead of us trying to blend in and build our churches that are like the world, I mean, we could have church in here. This is a bar. We could have church here. There's a stage here. There's lights. We could get some smoke going in here. We don't want to be like the world. We want to come out from the world, and we have to train people to be able to do that.
Well, things have changed, Coach, in America, right?
Yeah.
Christianity used to be the norm.
Everybody
and the
went
status
to church.
Quo,
yep.
And conservatives, and I use that term loosely, were the ruling group of
folks. We were it.
Now it's not that way.
No more.
The liberals, the left, the God haters, they're in power. We're the ones who are going to shift and shape culture, not them. And that's what's happened in the last 30, 40 years. That's changed in America. We've got to get in our minds that we are the opposition.
We are the counterculture, baby.
We are it.
Imagine there's no heaven. Well, let's imagine there is one, right?
Exactly.
Let's imagine there is a heaven. So we have to flip it, man. We have to understand the times in which we live and know what it is that we need to do.
That's why America is one of the greatest mission fields in the world now, because we meet people on the street that don't know and have not heard about Jesus.
No, but
20 years ago, it wasn't that way.
No,
it wasn't that way.
But they've heard about Jesus, but they don't have any
idea.
They ain't got no clue. So it's all counterculture. I just want to say this publicly, that again, if you want to give your money to somebody, give it to Mark Harrington, Created Equal. I'm making mad. Don't give it to your church. A lot of you guys quit giving money to some of those dead churches that you're in. Would you stop doing that?
Yeah, don't give it to a dead church. If you're in a good one, give it to
If you're in a good one, give it to We found out yesterday, last week, 75% of most churches, 75% of the money just goes to run the church. 75%, right? Mark's going to have, it's going to cost thousands of dollars to bring that jumbotron here today. Mark's going to have that jumbotron here because you put the money through him, it gets to the work.
It's
createdequal.org. You can find it there. And Mark's one of the few guys that if I ever call him and need help, he comes and helps, or he helps me, or however. And I'm going to tell you, it's not like that in all of ministry. Everybody's fighting over dollars. Everybody's fighting over credit.
They want the FaceTime.
Yeah, they want to be on TV. And Mark's one of those guys that's not like that. So, Mark, God bless you. Thanks for being here.
We'll see you later.
We'll be on the streets together
with
today.
The Satanists.
Yeah, we'll go get the Satanists are showing up, folks. We found out last night on Facebook. Specifically, the Satanists are showing up. Listen, I'm sorry it's not more interactive this morning because, again, I have trouble seeing my screen. I'm just trying to bring all of you a little bit of, let me tap this here. I'm just trying to bring all of you a little bit of a flavor to the type of people that are down here because they are just God-fearing people like you and I. Does anybody have a question at this point before I bring in the Unabomber? Come on over here, John. I got John Brock.
I just want to say for Johnny, he said he's not as smart as a truck driver. He's got to be smart as a whip to roll that 18-wheeler around.
Oh, are you kidding me, man? Johnny's got those street smarts, and he's a great guy, great committed man of the Lord. As everybody is down here, I'm telling you, it goes across all economic lines and all that kind of stuff. I got a guest right at 7:31, John. He's one of the slowest talkers in America. Let me put this, John. Put this in your ear. Your good ear, your bad ear. Okay, well, put this in your good ear. So, I've been threatening to bring John Brockhoff on just. For a long time. John, there's a lot of people that are watching us right now. First time I met John Brockhoff was about 3 or 4 years ago. I think we're in Jackson, Mississippi, I think. And John came up to me and introduced himself. He's from Ohio, Adams County, Ohio. And then he called me over by myself. He said, can I talk to you a minute, coach? And I said, sure, John. See, we out here on the streets, we have a nonviolent pledge that we don't believe in violence. We don't think that's the solution. Sometimes it is a solution, let's be honest. But they take a nonviolent pledge. And John called me off to the site, says, coach, I just want to be up front with you. I want you to know who I am. My name's John Brockhoff, and I did X amount of time in jail for burning down an abortion clinic. And I appreciate the fact that John told me that, two of them. I'm going to let John give you a little bit of that story here because it's a fascinating story. How much time did you spend in jail, John?
2,477 days.
Can you guys hear him okay? Okay, I gotta get that mic a little closer to you, John. Hey, let's do this. Hang on. Let me switch earphones. John, you put this one in. You put this one in your ear. And I'll take the other one, and that way the microphone's gonna be a little bit closer to you, okay? So John Brockhoff, I'm gonna because I'm the radio host here, I'm gonna keep things moving here real quickly. John spent how many days, John?
2,477 days
in prison for burning down two abortion clinics in the Cincinnati area. Now, I want to say this because John's a methodical speaker, and I don't want to steal his thunder. I want you to know this right up front, that John Brockhoff did everything he could before he burnt those clinics down. He did everything he could to make sure no one was in there. He staked it out. He went back several nights in a row to make sure there was no night watchman in there, no cleaning group, nobody in there. And he burned down two clinics. He did 2,400 however many days. Did a long time in prison as a result of it. And John's a lover of peace. He's got a buku number of children. And in my honest estimation, is a hero. John, tell us your story here a little bit. Try not to give us all the back details, but let's get to the point because we only got about 15 minutes.
Well, there was a day in 1984 when I stopped looking at this from a statistical point of view or as an issue and started seeing these babies as specific individuals, people who had never lived before and nor ever would get another chance.
A real life.
Pardon me?
Real life.
Yes, sir. And so when I came to that realization, I decided that the use of force was appropriate and proportionate.
And so I burnt up Planned Parenthood of Cincinnati and the abortuary where Martin Haskell, abortionist Martin Haskell, had invented the partial birth abortion procedure.
And you staked it all out and everything, right, John, before you went down there? To explain to everybody about that. Explain to me that night that you went in there and you heard the guy was, you thought maybe there was somebody downstairs. Explain that. Tell us that story.
Well, anyway, so when I got to Planned Parenthood on December 30th, 1985, by the way, I had already gone to Martin Haskell's abortuary set it up. I cut the glass on the basement window and had set the 5-gallon jug of gas there and unscrewed the cap so that when I came back from Planned Parenthood, you know, the whole thing could be done in a matter of minutes because his abortuary was just less than a half a mile from Cincinnati. So then I went to Cincinnati with the other 5-gallon jug of gas. And I,
how far apart are these two clinics, John?
Less than a half mile.
Less than a half mile, okay. 1985.
So there's an apartment building, that is next door to Planned Parenthood. And there is a side door there that faces Planned Parenthood, a side door of the apartment building. And so I stood there in the shadows for a while, trying to make sure there was nobody in there.
You didn't want to hurt anybody?
No. Actually, when I first got there the first time, I heard the unmistakable whisk, whisk, whisk of a straw broom being worked over a cement floor, and there was light flooding out of the basement into the backyard
of
Planned Parenthood.
So you knew somebody was in there?
Yeah. So I left and came back. I had to come back at least a couple times until it looked like he was gone. It was all dark in there. The basement door was closed. But I thought I better stand here for a few minutes and, you know, make sure that he's not in there. So while I'm waiting there by the side door of that abortuary, all of a sudden the front door opens. And the maintenance man comes out. And so now when a maintenance man comes out of a building that is clean, what does he do? He goes to the sidewalk, walks to his car, and leaves. 100% of the time. No variation. But this time, it didn't happen that way. He starts coming across the front yard straight towards me. And so I'm in shock. I don't know what to do. I'm kind of paralyzed. So he's walking straight at me, closer and closer, and I figure, does he know what I'm here for, and does he know what I'm about? So anyhow, he gets closer, and I have my ski mask rolled up with my face exposed, and I'm thinking, do I pull it down or not? And then when he's maybe 5 or 6 feet, yeah, something like that. I got to decide. So I decide to leave it up. If I pull it down, he might panic and shoot me. But if I leave it up, my face is exposed and he can identify me. So when it was just a couple paces away, we both took evasive action. I kind of ducked my head down so he wouldn't get a head-on look. He finally has noticed me for the first time, it seems, and he veers off away from the door that I'm standing in front of. So there's a street light burning somewhere, and the part of the wall of the apartment that he is, that's still ahead of him as he walks towards the rear, my shadow is on the wall ahead of him. And then I, under the stress of the moment, I do something that doesn't make any sense. I reach up and I pull the ski mask down over my face. He's already seen my face, so it's meaningless. But anyway, as I'm reaching up, I see the shadow of my hand reaching up and pulling my ski mask down. and the part of my shadow is still ahead of him on the wall. He sees this too, so he panics and he runs to the rear, jumps down the stairs. I run to the crawl space and I crawl in with my gas, and I'm sure that he's going to call the police. But the only thing that matters is for me to get the fire going before the police shoot me or arrest me. So I got the fire started and got out, but the police weren't there, and I went to the partial birth abortuary and set fire to it, and I went home. I didn't go directly home, though. I stopped by and visited a friend of mine, and
So, John, it took them... you did this. I'm just for lack of time here. You're on the lam, so to speak, John, for how long before they figured out it was you and Katja, John?
Well, they knew it was me right away. They told me if those places were ever destroyed that they would figure that it was me and they would come looking to me as their prime suspect. And I even wondered when I got home from this mission if they would be waiting in my driveway, but they weren't.
Yeah, they didn't have any evidence, really, that you had done it. They suspected you, but had no evidence.
Yeah. They knew it was me. In fact, two or three weeks later, when I went to Planned Parenthood, they let me know that they knew and that the feds knew. But I didn't leave any DNA or fingerprints or footprints. And apparently, the witness didn't.
So, John, you didn't hurt anybody.
You destroyed
the property. Did the abortions quit at those two places, John?
Did the abortions quit?
Did the abortions stop at those two locations?
Well,
they couldn't do the abortions there anymore, could they, John?
Yeah, they couldn't do them at Martin Haskell's abortuary, partial birth abortuary. And Cincinnati Planned Parenthood, they soon relocated to another place. But for a couple of years after that, there were like 200 protesters every Saturday. So they couldn't do them on Saturday.
And the point I was making is the buildings were so bad they couldn't perform.
They never were able to again.
John, let me, again, just in the interest of time here. Uh-huh. You told me something I thought was amazing. When you left your home that night, what was it you said to your wife? Do you remember?
It wasn't that night. It was 2.5 years later when I went on another mission to do the same thing.
You're going
to
do it again?
Down in Pensacola, Florida.
Oh, okay.
So I told her, I said, something's wrong. I don't know what it is, but the Lord has shown me that if I go on this mission, I'll either be killed or captured. And, you know, the few saboteurs who had gone before me against abortuaries, they'd gotten 20 to 40 years and things like that. So I told her, I said, if I go out on this mission, I won't be coming home. You'll never see me again.
That's a heck of a thing, folks, isn't it? Heck of a thing.
So she said, if you don't go, a little one like this will die. And she held up our infant son. And so I said, you're right, honey. I can't let fear hold me back. And besides that, I said to myself, I don't have any rational reason to believe this. It's just a gut feeling.
Mm.
But it, anyway.
Didn't happen. So, John, you spent how long in jail? 2004. How many years is that, John?
6 years, 9 months, and some change.
6 years. And then tell the miracle of what happened while you picked up a pen pal while you were in jail. Tell that story, John.
Well, anyhow, after the time I did for the Florida mission, which was not successful because it was a setup,
uh-huh.
It was a sting operation, I was sentenced to 30 months on that. And when just on the day that I was supposed to be released, they detained me and brought the charges against me for the fires in Cincinnati. And I'd been locked up for 2 years and 3 months, and I was supposed to get out that day. So it was hard.
Imagine that, folks. You were supposed to get out, and they arrested him again, said, nope, you're not going anywhere.
I was already dressed in street clothes and ready to walk to the gate. So I held my head in my hands and I said, all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. And I found out about a year later when I was finishing, when I was doing my next sentence, that was a 7-year sentence. Anyway, though, I got a letter from some young lady that I'd never met, never heard of, and she was born and raised on an island 10,000 miles away in the South Pacific. I wrote to her for 3.5 years, and just before I got out, I asked her to come immediately to the U.S. and marry me, and she did, and we have...
Pen pal becomes, he never met her, and he proposed to her, and how old were you, John?
I was 44.
He was 44, and she was?
23.
See, he was a crib, he robbed a crib, robbed a cradle.
So anyhow...
Still married today, John?
Yes, and the Lord gave us 6 children, and so sometimes Christians talk about the sacrifice that I made, but the truth is the Lord paid me back so much more in blessings than what I lost. That
John, your intention was never to harm anyone.
No, it was just to protect babies.
You said, if I burn down this clinic, they're not going to be able to kill babies here anymore.
That was it. And I wanted the Lord to see me do it because my first motivation was to love the Lord my God with all my heart and all my soul and all my strength. Because early on when I got involved, a brother showed me some literature with the graphic pictures, and all I could do was say, oh, God, I'm so sorry, Lord. And the guy said, his name was Joe. He said, I felt the same way when I saw these pictures. And he said, imagine how the Lord feels when he sees it. Because he sees through the abdominal wall of the mother when the baby is being torn apart. He sees this. And so I knew that other babies would still be killed in other locations. But at least I wanted to relieve the Lord from having to see them there.
Hey, folks, we got just a short period. Anybody got any questions? Anybody in the queue, anything you want to ask? I jokingly call him the Unabomber. He says, no, it's the Mad Bomber. And, you know, 85, think how long ago that is. He did it. He did his time. John is a peaceful, God-fearing man, a man of God like you can't even believe. And I just say public, it's an honor to know him. Anybody have anything you'd like to say to John? Ask John.
Great to see you, John.
Good to see you all too.
John's been fighting Steven. He's been trying to figure out how to get into the queue here, and he's never been able to do it. So I put him in the head.
It's Steven.
Oh, hey, Steven.
Steven, get on here.
Yeah, Steven. You remember Steven that rode the band with us?
We were with him a year ago.
Yeah, that's right. So, bless you, Steven. Anybody else?
Hey, John, thank you for your work. I just want to tell you, this is a big black guy from Brooklyn. Thanks.
This is Vince from Brooklyn.
Oh, praise the Lord, Vince. You're quite welcome.
Amen.
And so, truthfully, you know, John has been kind of shunned by the pro-life movement because, you know, listen, folks, the death knell to Christian ministry is to be labeled a terrorist. It's a death knell. And so... John's been had a hard time trying to find people who will embrace him. He hasn't killed anybody. He hasn't destroyed anything since 1985. He did it, and you know, he did his time, forgiven. But people are slow to embrace him. You know, slow to embrace him. And I just know him to be a man of God and know his heart and know that he wouldn't harm anybody. But he said they're killing babies inside that clinic, and I'm going to do everything I can to stop it, short of hurting somebody else, right, John?
Yeah.
Well, praise the Lord, man.
Hey, cool.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah, go ahead.
You know what amazes me as you're talking about that is the people who are killing the babies are deemed to be look like the right people, but the one who's trying to protect by burning down the place that's murdering them is the one that's looks bad to society.
Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, right? That's exactly where we are. And, but in fact, that was one of the videos I was going to show today at the abortion clinic yesterday. Ante, again, is just reading the riot act to the police in a nice way, saying, man, oh, man, wake up, guys. You have got this backwards. They had the federal marshals there. They had the FBI there. They had all those police there doing what? Guaranteeing a woman's right to murder her baby. You tell me that things aren't upside down in the good old U.S. of A.
Hey, Cook.
Yeah.
Hey. Hey, John, this is George. Hey, we embrace you big time. I'm just curious, what are you doing now?
I'm retired now. So
he doesn't burn any clinics anymore. Well, he's retired.
I pick it sometimes. I pick it and encourage sometimes from Planned Parenthood, but not as often as I should, because I live so far out in the country.
He's raising his family is really what he's doing. He's got six children with a second marriage, beautiful wife, and living the good life, huh, John?
Yeah.
So he's also here better, aren't you, John?
I come to events like this, and occasionally I'm able to get to Planned Parenthood, but I'm going to start going more often.
He's a long way. He's a long way from it.
Well, I look forward to meeting you, John. Being honored.
Look forward to meeting you, too.
See, it's the great dilemma, folks. This is one of the great dilemmas we have in what we call this pro-life ministry. Is it really a baby? Do we really believe those babies have been being murdered? That's the question, isn't it, John?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Because our actions don't appear to believe that they are.
How much time do we have?
We got about we got 2 minutes.
Yeah. All the questions become easy questions when you remind yourself that these are human beings, the same as anyone else. So you can, so when you're trying to figure out if something's right, like, is it right to burn this abortuary? Substitute somebody else for preborn babies. What if it was senior citizens above 65 years old? Would the use of force be okay then? Or what if it was your father or your grandfather?
What if it's a church camp?
Uh-huh. What if it was children with Down syndrome under 12 years of age? Would the use of force be justified then? So if preborn babies are just as human as anyone else,
then, we believe it, right?
Then all the questions are easy questions.
Easy questions. They are. So,
hey, Coach.
Yeah. Yeah, Larry.
I'd like to address the fact that he spoke on there for just a second. You know, a lot of the opposition, a lot of those who are pro-kill the babies, they take that position because they say they're not really babies. They're just a couple of living cells connected to each other at that point. Well, the left who proposes, and that is the stand they say they believe, that same left will pass a law that says you cannot catch a shrimp when the eggs are in the tail of the shrimp, because you're killing shrimp. They will recognize the shrimpness of a little egg in a shrimp's tail, but they won't recognize the humanness of a human, brand new DNA baby.
You know, Larry, one of the speakers last night made that very point, said really one of the things that's going on is the dehumanization of humans. In other words, the move is all across the world to try to say, we're just one of the animals. There's nothing special at all about us. And all these special rights and everything that we're giving to human beings, they don't deserve it. We just happen to be the most highly evolved, but we're no different than any other creature that God, that has evolved, right? So that's what it is, Larry. It's the dehumanization of human beings. We see it happening everywhere. And the only way they're able to get away with it is by that dehumanization process. I've sensed some movement going on here today, guys. I'm going to cut off a little bit early because I got to pack some stuff up here. I got to make a bathroom stop and some of those other issues as we're heading out here. I'm heading downtown today. Some will be at the abortion clinic. Some will be at the courthouse. Some will be at the hospital. We're going to be in a lot of different places today. So I just pray that you be praying for us. Sorry to cut off a little bit early. You guys sit in here and talk to each other as long as you can. And we'll be back here tomorrow, Thursday morning, believe it or not. Gary Pierce taking a picture of me right now. Be back here Thursday morning with a lot more stuff for you, all right?
Hey, Coach, real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, Jeff.
Get some video of the Jumbotron.
Okay, we'll do that for sure. Yeah, we'll get that for sure.
All right.
Bless you guys. Thanks a lot.
Love you, brother. See you.